The briefing today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams. Envisioning futures that are non-linear from the present isn't that hard. Teams need different tools and reasoning to think laterally. By combining human ingenuity with nature's genius, the possibility of envisioning alternative futures are infinite. Nature is the only real model that shows us a truly sustainable process creation. Today, I'm joined by Ilaria Mazzoleni to explore the following question. How can teams use biomimicry to envision and design for sustainable futures? Ilaria is an architect, founder of AM Studio, which is based in Milano and Los Angeles and operates worldwide. Her expertise is in biomimicry, bio-inspired design, and sustainable architecture. Welcome, Ilaria, and thank you for joining me at the briefing today.
Thank you, Mattia. Happy to be here.
Fantastic. And it is wonderful to have you here, Ilaria. So thank you so much. Biomimicry is not just being inspired by nature. It's much more than that. It's more profound. So what is biomimicry and how can we understand it?
Yes, biomimicry is a term that was coined in the 90s by Janine Benyus. She also wrote a book entitled Biomimicry. Comes from biomimetics, also used in the 50s already in technology and engineering. So I like to think of biomimicry in the terms that Janine sets of inspiration as a model and as a way that we are not simply copying nature, but we find inspiration from it. There are many ways of doing that. And as the field is developing and is applied not only to design, but also to architecture, and then in other field, in economics, et cetera, obviously the models change. And it can be, yes, formal, but it's also functions and processes. So services can be inspired by natural models. So ecology is really an ally to design. It's thought as an ally.
We are not biologists, but where and how can we start a biomimicry project?
We are observer and we are curious of our origins, right? Which is what makes a scientist a scientist. We are all scientists if we are curious to understand where we come from. But a biomimicry project or a bio-inspired project starts from working with other fields. I think that the 20th century was a century of specialization. You know, you would narrow down and be very structured and informed and expert in a field of expertise, and you would go down to the genome in a way, right? And we created great amount of knowledge. The 21st century is a century of interdisciplinary, of collaborations, right? I think what you call it think laterally. And design thinking is based on that, in a way, seeding that attitude. So a project, biomimicry project, starts from this interdisciplinary collaborative effort where I am not playing biology, but I sit at the table with a biologist. And we start thinking, which one is the problem and where can we source some inspiration in nature? I think that's the key part of it.
Mm-hmm. So my understanding is that we need to surround ourselves by a variety of disciplines and build a multidisciplinary team in order to start in an effective way a biomimicry project. And especially nowadays that we are facing wicked problem, which challenge itself is ill-defined and the solution is evolving as we explore more of the challenge itself. We need to have a deeper understanding, and observing nature is not just enough. We need to go deeper to the genome of that underlying principle and start to understand it to build more sustainable and resilient futures.
Yeah, it's interesting because as designers, we think that observing is equal to look, right? I walk around the neighborhood and I look. Yes, observation starts there, right? And positing questions. But at the same time, I, as a designer, when I started to work with biologists, I was saying, I want to look at the invisible like you guys do, at the Petri dish, which is not invisible because to them, that's their visible range, right? So it's zooming in, is really positing questions that are unfolding more and more, and is sourcing to scientific papers. So the observation is really going to a different level. It's not superficial, and that's why research takes so long, right? You were talking about that, and it's what in biology is called evolution also, right? The key invention or the key elements that made us who we became as humans are the transformations in biology that a creature didn't have an eye. And then there was this key innovation that happened, and suddenly there is a creature with an eye, and that living organism has higher opportunities to survive, right? And that's how is the survival of the fittest. So observing and giving time to research is really what makes a scholar, in a way, successful, and then a product successful. It's not a superficial invention, a look, but it's the intelligence embedded in innovation that requires time.
Yeah. And nature has done this kind of evolution in 3.8 billion years, and trial and error. And that's how we get to this almost perfect, I think it's perfect nature, but almost perfect for those that don't believe about that. So in your book, Architecture Follows Nature, Biomimetic Principle for Innovative Design, as the title suggests, you present some principle of design and bio-inspired solution. What are them? And, you know, if you can share with us some examples, some principles, that would be awesome.
Yes, the book was born a few years ago in collaboration with Shauna Price. Shauna is an evolutionary biologist. I was teaching at SIARC, Southern California Institute of Architecture, back then, and I was teaching biomimicry. And I was also teaching sustainable system, which is how building works. And our solutions are all engineered, right? We put photovoltaic panel on the roof, we insulate more the buildings, but we always go to engineering and technology straight away. And architects are not so taken by engineering, otherwise they would study engineer. But they wanted to be inspired by something and improve the design of buildings also from a comfort perspective. So we started thinking, well, let's look at nature. Let's look at how animals thermoregulate, how animals harvest or plants harvest energy, et cetera. And that's how our Bioinspired Design course came about, and then how the book came about. One of the major elements in design and in architecture is the facade, the building envelope, right? That's formally so important for architects, but is also, if you think of it, it protects you from the inside, from the outside, from the elements. It provides light, et cetera. So it's a filter. And what does that in nature is our skin, right? And there are so many skin coverage. So the book is about learning from animals, skin coverage diversity to see if we can improve our building envelopes. And in doing so, we learn the language of biology and we learn the language of architecture, we improve it. And we set up a method of looking at nature, going to architecture and looping back. It's an iterative system, right? As in design and in design thinking, we need that. It's not linear, it's recurrent. And is informed by collaborating also with biologists or having students that have a biology background together with an architectural background. So the book describes this methodology that can be applied also to other questions, right? You set up the problem, you discuss it, and you keep unfolding it.
So do you start a project by looking at nature and exploring that particular aspect? And you see, oh, this is a fantastic way how nature solve these issues, and you bring it to your project, so you start defining and designing something about that way of solving for that issue, or you do the other way around, you need to find a solution to a problem that you already have. You know, you're already studying and analyzing and designing to solve that challenge, and you look at nature. Which way do you go about?
Yeah, you can go either way and you can keep it as open as you like. I like to give a little bit of structure like in science, and I don't believe that in science there is no creativity. What makes a great scientist is his ability to envision possibilities. But there is also a structure. So especially if you want to describe a method to others, you need to provide a structure. That doesn't mean that the other that reads it says, oh yeah, but I want to do it the other way. So in our case, we knew that we wanted to think about building envelopes. And we knew that skin was, you know, we had some thoughts about how skin is a filter. And it's also spoken about in architecture, but always more metaphorically, you know. And so we went deeper into that and we said, How do we thermoregulate, right? That's a specific question. And we both, I say, as an architect, I say, building envelopes help us to thermoregulate through insulation, through the level of material, the selection of material. How, I asked the biologist, how does that happen in the body, right? And she would say, well, the skin does this, and then obviously the internal organs also participate. And so to answer your question, it can go either way, but you have to be structuring the experiment, right, correctly. And I want also to say that this is just the beginning. Nothing is isolated in nature. You cannot solve a problem by only stay on the problem, but you also have to create boundaries, right? You cannot tackle everything at the same time. So A, I do recognize that everything is interconnected and we have to think in an ecosystem or in a system way. But as I'm solving this problem, I'm trying also to focus.
So once you have defined the focus of the research project, how do you go about defining the boundaries of observation in nature? As we know, nature is so vast and interconnected and also go deep from a micro level to a micro level. How do you go about defining such key boundaries and constraints of research?
So in this book that was done a few years ago, the boundary was the body. The skin is a boundary, right? You can see me, I can see you, I can define what I see. And similar a building has a boundary, the building envelope, and I can say there is an inside and an outside, right? And then I can say the skin is an organ, so it has been defined as such. Then it's connected to other organs, but I can name it and I can list its function. As soon as though I define those boundaries and I dissect that throughout 1 year of work or 5 years of work, I started challenging the boundaries because I, as we said earlier, the invisible or the micro takes me to understand that actually there is a microbial cloud around me and around you. So my skin is not my exterior boundary anymore. So it's for science and for generally a curious person, a designer, right? You design something and then you're on to the next one, right? And the next one challenges the first one also. But you need also the ability to focus. It's a little bit, it's like training for a marathon, right? It's stay focused.
Yes, when your marathon requires a lot of dedication and a resilient personality, especially when you're on it. I never run one, but my dad ran plenty of marathon when he was younger and also 100 kilometers when the Ironman was not even a thing. And he always told me that between the 32K to the 35-37, those were the hardest kilometers because you're almost there, but not yet. But back to us and back to biomimicry. Can we actually envisioning more sustainable and resilient future by starting project with biomimicry principle and, you know, some principle, some bio-inspired principle?
Definitely. I think biomimicry and looking at nature as a source of inspiration is something that humans have always done, right? From and the most famous example is Leonardo da Vinci, that looked at birds, how to fly, and we are still doing it. People think that we are not looking at birds anymore, but in aerospace engineering, they still do it. And I know scientists that are and engineers that are doing it. But we are just at the beginning. It's like understanding the brain. We are just at the beginning of understanding how our brain works and chemically, physically, neurologically, etc. So biomimicry is just at its infancy. And the future is about embracing really ecology as a foundation, especially in economics. I think the monetary economics is so obsolete. We worry about how much money we have, and we don't worry if we can breathe air, right? Breathing air is primary to, and comes much earlier than being rich. If you cannot breathe, what do I use money for? So I think really looking at nature and ecology is so fundamental to our future. And it's so myopic not thinking that way.
Absolutely. There was a movie I watched maybe mid-2020, that the economic value, the currency that you were using to pay things was not... the fiat that we know, dollars, euro, but it was time. And I cannot remember the title of the movie. It was quite an old movie, but it was quite futuristic in that way. It was kind of questioning, what if we need to pay things with our time, but not our time of on a daily basis, our time of life, our lifespan would kind of shorten because we spend all our times in something. So it's interesting that you compare this with breathing, with air that we breathe.
Yeah, it's fundamental that we put what is the most important first, and we talk about it because it's always a hidden message. And you are labeled as someone that, doesn't think of what is the problem today. No, it's thinking at the foundations that creates the possibility of building a stronger world and a more durable. And, I was reading that in 600 years, if we continue this way, we will not have trees, because we think of trees as a disposable good, and actually they're foundational to human lives. So it's really skewed the way that we just worry for our little situation at this right time. And thinking big is fundamental to research and to future.
And the future of architecture is one of, something that you look into, and microbiome is sustainable living environment that shares element with nature. And I guess you embrace a vision of merging the two aspects, the natural aspect and the human, within one same place, more than now.
Yeah, that project you are starting to refer to links to what I was saying earlier, that, on the book, we were looking at the skin as a boundary in a way, as an element. But then as we kept learning, we understood that actually there is a microbial cloud around us, that it's expanding our being. And actually our body is made of water and microbes, right? We are not like one entity. We are billions of and trillions of elements. We are not one whole. That makes a whole, but it's made of these multiple. And this inspired another level of research that was going beyond the building envelope, was really about a house and how a house that is for this model family, right? Three people, the kid and the parents, they have a dog. How this house could change, right? We still have our kitchen, even though we like to think about the future, our daily life is made of things that were there 100 years ago. How can actually learning from what biology is discovering today inform our future life? And so we started looking at this new research that connected how the the flora of our intestine, right, is connected to the well-being of our microbiome, is connected to the well-being of our brain, right? So if we eat well, if we have, you know, starting the morning of this family with nurturing our stomach and our guts actually will help our brain. And then we can compost and we can produce our food. And then instead of having windows with the typical glass, there are some bacteria that with changing humidities, they open and enclose. And actually in some sport clothing, they started using it. So what if our building envelope is made up of some of these elements? There are microorganisms that are phosphorescent and fluorescent, right? So what if our lighting is with using, harvesting that? What if there are studies that talk about how the exchange of the microbiome between animals, plants, and humans enriches and strengthen our immune system? So before we were over-sterilizing everything, but actually some dirt is not bad for us. Obviously, the micro is not all good or all bad, right? That's a simplification. So again, as we start to look at nature and as science, we can learn more and more and also inform design and not design buildings anymore the way that we designed it, you know, 100 years ago. And this project that was, you know, kind of an idea competition, it's not built and it will take some time to build, really looks at allies that are at the micro scale and really shifts our interest to that microbial world that is so fascinating.
Yes, indeed. It is very fascinating that we could use biomimicry principle to hypothesize, explore, and design alternative futures. But the question here is, how easy to start a biomimicry principle? We talk about elements at the micro scale, and we need to be expert, and we need to have a laboratory to do such exploration. So here's the question, how easy to start a biomimicry project?
I can say it's very easy and it's very difficult at the same time. Innovation doesn't look for easy, right? It looks for inspiration, and the R&D time is investment, right? It's social investment, mental investment, money investment, but it's where we look at for the future, right? Evolution comes from. So I'm not sure that easy is really what I'm looking at. I'm looking for something that inspires me and inspires to be better human being, right? That are part of what we call planet Earth, and not just looking at it and trying to exploit it and run for the available resources, but really optimize the minimize the use so that we optimize it. So I don't want to say that it's difficult, because nothing that you do with passion is difficult, but I don't think life is about easy in general. I think life is difficult, and that's the beauty of it, right? Is really waking up with a purpose, and that's what I hope that, you know, looking at nature is inspiring us to.
Absolutely. I agree with that. Nature can really inspire us to envision, develop, and design different future scenarios that are more resilient and sustainable. Before we go, what is the last book or the current book that you are reading now?
So there are two books that I always, two books I can mention. There is a book that I finished last night. It's funny you're asking, because it's called The Lab Girl by Hope Jaren. And she's a scientist and describes 20 years of struggles to study seedlings, how plants bloom and the role of plants. And it's really beautiful and shows how difficult for a woman scientist having a lab and being a scholar and the hope of it. And the beauty of doing scientific research. And then I just started to read again America by Jean Baudrillard. And it's a classic that every X amount of years I like to read again because of a personal connection to Europe and to the United States. And it's a book that really keeps me reflecting about our global lives and our roots in this case. So there is where I am.
Fantastic. So on that, I really want to thank you, Ilaria, for your time and for sharing with us your expertise. And let's all continue to explore more of nature underlying working principle. Thank you.
Thank you.
The briefing today unplugs people's creativity by embracing the wonder of change. It seeks inspiration from maverick innovators and change makers to share their stories, experiences, and dreams.